Hello all sentient beings and welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we talk about all news, comics, and media related to the... On this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, we're going to review IDW Publishing's Transformers issue... Oh, that's right, we don't have one. I guess we'll just review some Beast Wars episode. We'll also talk about Titan Master's attack set for the Transformers trading card game, and it looks like we've got two, count them, two live-action Transformers movies that are coming down the pipe. Today is Friday, February 7th, 2020, and this is episode 167 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that thinks a Beast Wars movie would be just prime. I'm your host Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team. Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hey, how's it going?
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
How's everybody doing tonight? Let's talk Transformers.
All right, and back again, helping us out this week, we have Ant from TFU.info and Transformers University.
Hey there. We're all gonna die.
Ant was gracious enough to join us this week, hosting Transmissions and Transmissions Alt Mode. So thanks for hanging out and lending us your Transformers expertise.
Always happy to be here.
I was going to say, you've now been on more shows than Yoshi in 2020.
That is true.
That might be a New Year's goal.
I don't think it'll be hard to outpace him.
Come on, Yoshi, prove him wrong. Prove him wrong.
Be on the show that you helped found.
I mean, the least you guys to do is get Russian Yoshi.
What? Somebody say my name? I'm
Ant,
here to help you.
Why, Ant? Why?
We got any Donatrions here tonight? I'm here to collect money.
You asked for this, Ant.
I'm not laughing so much at the Russian accent as much as I'm laughing at your reaction to the Russian accent.
God damn it, Yoshi.
Anyway, we do thank our Donatrions for continuing to support the show.
Yeah, you do.
We start every episode by thanking them. Of course, Ant is also a Donatrion, so a special thanks to Ant for being here as well.
I know how you thank him.
Okay.
Right, I was taking a drink of water.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for supporting the show. If you are not a Donatrion and you would like to become one, just go to transmissionspodcast.com/support, and that's where you can find links to support us on Patreon or PayPal. So it would be great if you could help us out. You can also help us out by buying merchandise from our TeePublic store, and that is at transmissionspodcast.com/shop. You can get some cool Transmissions-themed t-shirts, other Transformers-themed t-shirts, and lots of geeky variety shirts from TeePublic. If you go through our link, we get a little bonus for every shirt that you purchase, every merchandise you purchase, because it's not just shirts, it's other stuff too. You can also...
Fun fact, the Transmissions underwear does not support Charles.
Wow. Okay.
You can put two and two together. Maybe you... not. Big dick. He has big dick.
Oh, God.
All right. Time to deport right
now. Sorry, K-Girl. He stepped over my promo for you as well, but I was going to say you can also visit K-Girl's store. because she's an awesome artist and has lots of cool designs to purchase at her store. That's at tpublic.com/user/superstarK. Please,
you know, I think from this one episode that Russian Yoshi might have had more airtime than actual Yoshi at this point in 2020.
Also true.
This is very true.
So one of the perks of being a Transmissions Donatrion is automatically being entered in our Toy Hacks monthly drawing for getting a $10 gift code where you can get some cool sticker label sheets from Toy Hacks. And our winner for this month, or for last month, I should say, January, was a friend of the show, Rick Kappa, who has been a longtime Transmissions listener and Donatrion. So congratulations, Rick. And you can see how your donation benefits you. So congratulations. And we hope everyone will continue to support the show. All right, let's get into the alt mode news and talk about some comics news. All right, first up, we've got some teaser art from the upcoming Transformers Galaxies number 4 that is at this point about 2 months late, going on 3 months, but supposed to be coming February 19th, so... just a couple more weeks, and we'll get the conclusion to Transformers Galaxy's first arc, the Constructicons arc. But on Twitter, Tyler Blazinski...
We need to have Comics Watch. 2020.
Yeah, it's pretty frustrating at this point, but hopefully this date will be hit, and then we can have Tyler Blazinski back on the show to do a post-mortem on the Transformers Galaxy's Constructicons Rising story, because we're all anxiously looking for the conclusion. But yeah, Tyler released some of Livio Mirabandelli's artwork on Twitter just to give it a little teaser. It's not a lot, but there is the promise of some significant action and, you know, Devastator rampage in this final issue. So we're looking forward to that.
I gotta say, Tyler's doing a really good job of keeping you, you know, reminded that this is coming. Cause he's gotta be kind of pissed that this keeps getting delayed.
Yeah.
Cause you can go back through his Twitter history and just see all the times he's reminded you saying, you know, hey, check out Galaxies number 4. It'll be out such and such a date. Oh, it's been pushed back. It'll be out. Oh, it's coming today. This Wednesday. It'll be out. Oh, it's been pushed back again. You know, it's just constant pushbacks for this last issue for him. And he's doing a really good job of keeping everyone kind of interested. And yeah, it's, I feel for the guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now at this rate, he'll probably tease the entire issue.
And another bit of news that was revealed on Twitter from Sarah Peter Durocher. So, and this was a bit of a surprise. So we knew that she was doing artwork on the Transformers Valentine's Day special, which I really hope comes out sometime in February, maybe. that's not a guarantee, but she tweeted out the artwork for the cover that she's doing, and just in a reply to her own tweet, she just mentioned, "Oh, I also wrote it and colored it." So this was a bit of a surprise, because when this issue was solicited, it was being listed as being written by Kate Leth and Cohen Edenfield and Patrick Ehlers. So I don't know what's happened in the background, but apparently
Ehlers is still on the title.
Yeah. What do you think? There's a chance that this is a culmination of a bunch of different stories, and Sarah's got one in this.
Yeah. I think there's going to be multiple stories in here. Mm-hmm. I saw here Ehlers and Lawrence probably have a story, and then I don't know, Bertram and then Sarah.
Mm hmm.
So she wrote in color and drew hers. Then maybe there's three stories in there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But this just proves there is nothing that she cannot
do. So this makes me really looking forward to this now. Although I am curious as to what happened to Kate Leth and Cohen Edenfield, because that's a husband and wife team who were supposedly writing a Transformers story. So I don't know if they had some kind of schedule issue and couldn't do it, or I don't know if there was some kind of friction in the background. But
aren't they doing a Galaxies story together? I feel like they're doing the Cliffjumper story.
The Cliffjumper story is being drawn by Alex Mill, and I don't think it's Kate Leth and Cohen Edenfield, though, doing the
writing.
Weren't
they doing... I think you're right about them doing a Galaxy story, but I thought that they might have been doing the one about...
Greenlight and RC. And,
yeah, that one.
Maybe.
Let's see. Just digging through. Kate Leth and Sam Maggs.
Okay.
Oh, no, Kate Leth and they were supposed to do Galaxies 5 and 6 together.
Oh.
Hmm.
Which is RC and Greenlight. You are correct.
5 and 6? 5 and 6 is Cliffjumper.
I mean, I'm going off an article from San Diego Comic-Con. It could be...
Oh, okay.
In the wrong order or pushed back, but they were supposed to do together the RC and Greenlight story.
Okay.
Yeah, so something's happened in the background where things have gotten shifted around, but... I'm not
surprised how far back we are in releases, so...
Yeah. But, I mean, the upshot is this, we get some writing from Sarah Peter Drew O'Shea, which is the first... I think this is the first time we've gotten some writing from her, so I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, this looks fun. I'm wondering, I guess this is in the new continuity, right? So that kind of leaves Blastoff and Cosmos to have different interests, you know, and different characterizations than they did in the IDW, the first previous IDW continuity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering about that, though, because it's clearly like the design from the old continuity. It being a special, who knows, it could just, you know, be a one-off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could. Could also be one of that kind of just sits where it could fit in either, kind of like that RC mm-hmm. story from the Women's Day book they did.
Yeah. Synergy.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully we'll get that maybe March, April. I don't know. Just in time for Valentine's Day. We'll see. All right, that's all the comics news, so let's move on to our review. And with no comic this week, we are reviewing a Beast Wars episode, and that ties in with the media news discussion we'll have a little bit later. So we decided on the season 2, episode 1 premiere of Beast Wars, Aftermath. And... this is also available on Tubi TV for free. So I think both in the U.S. and Canada and other places, you can watch all the Beast Wars episodes along with all the G1 episodes. And I think Transformers Animated and the Energon trilogy, a lot of Transformers stuff is on.
Everything you would want to watch except for the 2001 RID series.
Beast Machines is on there.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So there. Sorry, Jeremy.
I've got the UK DVDs. I'm fine.
All right. Well, I'm putting you on the spot, Jeremy, but do you want to take us through Beast Wars Season 2, Episode 1?
I would give it a shot because we didn't actually play this very well. All right. Beast Wars Season 1 ended, if you've never seen it, with a giant explosion. The Valk kind of moon, which was... It was actually a super weapon, was going to destroy the planet that, you know, the Maximals and Predacons were on. Optimus Primal was taking this little ship up to try to destroy it. Or I can't remember exactly what he was trying to do, but he got caught in the beam and got blown up. This episode is dealing with, appropriately, the aftermath. And that's why they titled it that. So as everyone's recovering, a quantum surge hits the planet and it just kind of completely stupidly kills Pterosaur because no one liked Pterosaur. But basically any of the any of the Transformers that were originally from the ships, but not in like a CR chamber, got transmetal two bodies? Any of the Transformers that were kind of born on Earth, you know, like their pods were opened while they were on Earth, they were unaffected. But so like Rat Trap and Cheetor got their new bodies. They're all shiny. Rat Trap has wheels. And Megatron got his new body. Waspinator was in a CR little pit thing. So, you know, he misses out on all the upgrades. Megatron decides to take this opportunity to attack the Maximal base. On the Maximal side, Airazor and Tigatron are going to go look for Black Arachnia, who had disappeared after the, like, in all the chaos. Black Arachnia, as she's trying to escape, she's still got Tarantula stuck in her head, and he, like, they run across his body, and he kind of forces her to take his body with him. And then Rhinox and Dinobot come out of their CR chambers and kind of see what's going on. And then the Predacons attack, and we get to see some of the new modes and stuff. And Cheetor kind of screws stuff up because he's still trying to figure out how to fly. And eventually the Maximals kind of fight them off enough where the Predacons escape. And then we see at the very end, two stasis pods are shown that are kind of, they're malfunctioning, and you see a hand go up out of one. And then that's the teaser for the next episode, which introduces the fusers. So that's kind of my rough summary of the episode. It's been a while since I've watched this episode. When I go back to watch Beast Wars, it's usually kind of like the later season two, early season three arcs. But this was really good. I always forget just how good the writing is. It hits some good humor points. 3D really doesn't hold up. The animation is just, I wish that they could find, like, they could re-render this, but I enjoyed watching it. I wanted to now watch a lot more Beast Wars. What were your guys' thoughts on the episode? Daryl, you're the huge Beast Wars fan watching this.
I mean, we've talked about it a lot. The animation, like you said, it doesn't hold up. And as I was watching through the episode, I couldn't get past how goofy it looked. So it was difficult for me to kind of get into the story. The idea that Optimus, whatever, had died.
That was just regular Optimus.
Oh, sorry. He's, you know, whatever. The fact that the idea that he had died, I mean, this was, ideally the second generation of Transformers, right? G2 mm-hmm. had happened, but there really wasn't any new cartoon for that. So, they already had a history of killing Prime. So, so any kind of fan would know that this is not a for sure or thing. It's like it's he's coming back. But the battle that they had with the Predacons was kind of fun. I mean, it's a fairly standard Transformers battle. This was the first appearance of Transmetal Megatron, which was my favorite Beast Wars toy of all time, and B, probably the crappiest Beast Wars toy of all time. So how it, not in design, but in execution. So it breaks really easily. So, but not on the shelf when you bought it. I mean, it just, time just isn't its friend. So, But yeah, it's just a great looking character model. So
gold,
I mean,
plastic syndrome.
Yeah, but I could look at the at that version of Megatron, you know, a lot more. So I might consider doing more of these, you know, if we do season two stuff, because season two Megatron is just, he's just awesome looking. But yeah, I mean, the goofiness of the show, I mean, even with the animation being quote unquote crummy, the way that they had like the characters flying around and, what is it? Cheetor flies into Rat Trap and knocks them, you know, out of the fight, right? Like, you know, Megatron could have destroyed him at that point, but because he sees Rhinox, he decides he's going to leave. He doesn't have time to take the shot. I mean, it's a week, but whatever. It's cartoons. Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I've showed Beast Wars episodes to my daughter, who's now 10, and she will not watch them. It's just the animation is just not, it won't, she cannot stand it. So,
That is probably where a traditional animated show holds up better than these early CG series.
Yeah. Yeah. There is something to be said for being able to lead the technological revolution when it comes to animation, right? But you're gonna lose out in the long run, I think, because it's got to be sustainable. You know, does it hold up? And stuff like this and reboot and all that kind of stuff is just, I mean, you know, you guys have made fun of me for not liking it and said, oh yeah, it's made by a Canadian company, you should like it all, you know, all the much more. But it just doesn't look good anymore.
Right. Ant. What were your thoughts rewatching this?
You know, it's fun. You know, first off, I am a huge Beast Wars fan. It's what brought me back into this hobby. And so I think for me, you know, talking about the animation not holding up. Yeah, it's of its time, I think is the best way to put it. When, you know, if you think mm-hmm. about it in a historical context, you know, they were doing this animation. You know, think of other community computer animation that was out at the time. You're talking about like.
Toy Story,
Monsters, Inc., and they were doing it on a tenth of the budget. So it's of its time, but it's also, you know, very well done for what they had to work with. I think, you know, there's some neat stuff there with the textures, the shininess on the transmetals. And, you know, talking about the transmetals, these are, you know, these were introducing not just the characters, but the toys. And the toys basically set the standard for Transformers up through now. I mean, these are some of the best deluxe figures that were made in the late 90s that were basically the basis for a lot of what we're seeing today, even in Generations. Story-wise, the writing is fantastic on this. I mean, you have your comedy, you have your action. There's a lot of subtle things in the plot and in how things are told that I actually, not that I've never noticed before, but I didn't remember. Like, Black Arachnia walking out of the ship and looking at the sky and seeing only one moon and mm-hmm. kind of just nodding. There's no verbal, there's no nothing, but it clearly marks off that that's important and she knows. You know, there's the shot there. I mean, there's the gratuitous shot of Tarantulas in her pretty little head with her pretty little thoughts as the line goes. That's kind of the basis for the masterpiece toy. But the one thing that really, really stood out to me when I was watching this is I've seen this episode countless times. So I haven't seen it in a while, but I was kind of doing some other things. And it was just how good the voice acting is on this series that I could get what was going on without even having to watch the animation because the actors are just that good. You know, in the story, there's some other things such as like Rhinox, you know, basically taking even Rat Trap taking the lead of the team while everyone else is down. And then when they take Rhinox and Dinobot out of the CR chambers, you know, Dinobot's his feisty self and Rhinox is having none of it. And even though he's the brains, he's also the brawn. And I like how that works.
And I just love how it was kind of a more subtle, just I'm in a very bad mood and Dinobot just backs down immediately.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And then they, you know, back to some of the subtle writing. So the idea that it's only the characters that were not on Earth, not born, quote unquote, on Earth, that get affected unless they're in a CR chamber, right? So Waspinator's in a CR pool, and Rhinox and Dinobot are in the CR chambers aboard the Axelon. And one of the neat things here is that when they kill off Pterosaur and Scorponok, Pterosaur's hand is above the lava as he's dying, and it starts to glow. So he starts to turn transmetal as he's dying. So they really sell that point that it was meant for those specific set of characters that were on Cybertron before Earth. And then, you know, there was one other thing that it's sticking in my head that I had to talk about on this, and it'll come back to me in just a minute. Yeah, that's basically the gist of my feeling about it, that the acting also was just so good. You know, David Kaye as Megatron is just amazing, and watching and watching Scott McNeil as both Dinobot and Rattrap argue with himself, and that Rattrap is my Rattrap character model. Like, if they were ever to make a masterpiece, it would be this one, because damn it, the wheels are not on the shoulder and the shoulders in the toy mode model, and I would want to see that in a new version of Rattrap.
Mm-hmm. And this is where I keep saying I wish they would just, like, someone would re-render the show, keep the voice acting and sound effects and everything, and just upgrade the visuals.
Oh, there it is. You reminded me about the sound effects. That was the last thing I wanted to talk about. Something I never noticed before on this show. Waspinator has different wing sounds in robot mode than he does in his wasp mode. So there's a scene where he's fighting Cheetor and he transforms, and the sound of his wings actually changes from one mode to the other.
That's cool. That's really subtle. All right. Charles, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this was fun to revisit. It made me want to go back and watch the other voices two-parter, and then watch Coming of the Fusors afterwards. Because the thing I liked about Beast Wars season 2 was how it was fewer episodes, but I think they had tighter story arcs. Like, season 1 was 26 episodes, but it was a lot of one-offs and standalone episodes. They had a through line with the Vok storyline, but that was, you know, that was spread out throughout the season. And then in season 2, it was much more, you know, shorter story arcs, but one leading into the other, and then ending with the agenda and the whole, you know, very tight G1 tie-in at the end of the season. So this starts that here in the aftermath, and I liked everything you guys mentioned already. I mean, just the new transmetal models, I think, were really well done. Daryl, you mentioned about how, yeah, they kill off Optimus Primal, and of course we know he's coming back. And they lampshade that a bit in the previous episode, in the Other Voices episode, because when Megatron is gloating to Optimus when he's about to be destroyed, he says, "Oh, you Optimuses always like to sacrifice yourselves." So that's not in this episode, but I thought that was a nice callback. You know, they do kill off two Predacons here, and they never come back. So they really legit killed off Scorponok and Pterosaur, and they're not returning, and they're just dead, and they're not even really lamented. Like, none of the other Predacons even care, like, notice that they're gone. So other than Megatron is like, "Well, I'm down a couple of troops now." that's the only thing he cares about. So it's rare that you get final, you know, really final Transformer deaths on a Transformer show. So,
But it's clearly making room for some of the Fusers that are going to be joining.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's always, I mean, of course, in the background, as you mentioned, it's the budgetary concerns. You've only got enough money to animate enough, certain number of characters. And if you've created a bunch of new models with the transmetal guys and the Fusors, so you've got to make space for them. Like, we also see later in the season that Tigatron and Air Razor kind of go off into the sunset, and they're not around for a lot of time, because that's two extra character models you can save money not animating. So,
and with that in mind, this show through its from here on out really is not afraid to kill a character and leave them gone.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And
well, then, and with Optimus, they actually do hold him out until I think episode 3.
Yeah.
So, you know, nowadays, you know, I'm thinking, like, in the Flash TV show, he did the Flashpoint, which I was expecting to be a multi-episode arc, and it was just a single episode, and it was like the huge missed opportunity. And they were able to just kind of hold him back, kind of introduce all these new concepts before bringing Optimus back.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool.
Yeah, and I liked the whole Maximals. They kind of rally even without Optimus, and yeah, Ryan, both, yeah, Rat Trap takes charge when they're and you see Rat Trap is now, he's got a little bit more confidence. Like, I remember, mm-hmm. like in the beginning of in season one of Beast Wars, he's very portrayed as very cowardly and not really willing to
selfish
and not really willing to fight and do what the team needs. And here he steps up, he goes, you know, head to head. He plays a game of chicken with Megatron, which is, that's not insignificant. And then Rhinox, yeah, is, he's no nonsense. He's not into, I mean, this reminds me of there was a Beast Wars episode in season one where they do the Maximals do argue about chain of command because Optimus is incapacitated. And that's when Dinobot and Rat Trap are arguing over who should lead, and Rhinox kind of stays out of it. But here he's like, no, this is we're in trouble, and you know, we just need to do what we need to do. We can't argue about this. So
yeah,
it's really good character development, and good writing, great voice acting. Megatron gets some great one-liners. One that stuck out to me was the new packaging, same product, losers. And Megatron is just Beast Wars. Megatron is a great character here throughout this series.
Awesome. And, go ahead.
Oh, and Charles, going back to what you said about season two, one thing I've kind of maintained as an opinion of mine is that the final five episodes of season two of Beast Wars may be the five best episodes, like. Best five episode story arc in Transformers history, and I don't think that one has been matched since.
Wow. Okay. Now I have to go back and do a rewatch. Now I can't.
I don't know. Transmutate is not one of my favorite episodes, but the other four I would agree.
But if you put those five together, and you're hard pressed to find a better string of five episodes. The Ultimate Doom or a couple of the other five parters don't even hold up to those five.
I'm withholding judgment. I don't know if I can certify that opinion, Ant, but I will respect your opinion there. I think these are some of the best Transformers fiction the agenda for me. The agenda is really something that was a high point for me, and I was in college at the time, and like all my friends who were not into Transformers as much as I was able to get them back into watching Beast Wars with the agenda and having Ravage come. And, I recorded the episodes off of my cable TV and then played them and with all my friends in the college dorm, and people were actually excited about Transformers again. So, yeah, it's definitely a high point.
Awesome. Well, we would like to hear what other people thought of this episode, since it's freely available to watch. Give us your feedback, and then let us know what else you would like us to talk about on these many weeks where IDW still doesn't have something out. And with that, we will wrap up our review.
All right, and we will move on to Transformers Media News.
All right, in Media News this week, we've got a Japanese Duel Masters Black Box Pack Starscream robot mode card. And this is a trading card game card, I guess, for Duel Masters. I don't know. Is this Yu-Gi-Oh?
I believe so.
Yeah. But it's all set up like the TCG, so... But yeah, no, they look really cool. I'm not entirely sure as to what game they're for, but yeah, the art's really cool. Both modes, you get the robot mode on one side, and the alt mode is the Siege Tetrajet mode, so it looks really cool. It's really neat, and it's entirely in Japanese, so I remember back when I played Magic, every now and then you'd see somebody with a whole bunch of Japanese cards, and you'd have to say, what does that card say? They say, oh, well, this card says this. And I'd be like, give me something that says it in English, please.
Yeah, well, these days you can just point Google Translate at it.
Yeah. Next up, we've got some more trading card game news. The Titan Masters Attack Set is available for pre-order on Amazon. This is going to be a 30 booster packs, so 240 cards, one Fortress Maximus Titan pack, that's of three cards, and you're going to get a Titan Master characters, mix and match heads and bodies to customize Titan Masters to fit your playstyle, a bunch of wreckers, stratagem cards. It's a completely new card type that lets players customize characters on their team, and Fortress Maximus. Every sealed Titan Master attack booster display includes a Fortress Maximus Titan pack. I don't know about you, Ant. We haven't chatted about it before, but there's the Transformers TCG is like just growing by leaps and bounds, and it's gaining popularity like crazy. Have you tried it?
I've tried it, yes. Hasbro was kind enough to send me the Metroplex set and the first booster, and I tried it, but like I've tried it basically just playing against myself to figure out the rules, and it, not that it was confusing for me, but it felt like I needed to play against actual other people to really understand it better. That said, it's fun, and if it gets more people into the fandom and it gets more people, you know, talking about Transformers and learning about the characters, then I am certainly all for it. I think I am shocked at how popular it really is. I think that's the thing to me that, you know, usually something like this, something that's branded and is a TCG, usually falls by the wayside as just being somebody trying to cash in. And this has been super successful. And it's kind of amazing just to watch this thing grow to where it's been.
Yeah. No, it's definitely popular. I know that they run tournaments now at TFCon. So if you want to get some actual play time with real human beings, bring some cards. And I know that some people will be there to help you, you know, play some games with you. So that'd be kind of fun. But yeah, this is looking like a whole bunch of new stuff, entirely new play patterns to throw into your deck. So look at that if you're looking for something new. This game's changing. Like every single set that comes out throws a whole bunch of new stuff at it. Next up, we've got another of the Soundtrack Saturdays, and it's a BotBots origin story with stop motion video. So take a look at that if you want. It's a what is it called? The song is called Musical Mall Madness. So there's a video here and a song that goes along with it. Next up, we've got an interesting thing here. You all remember the Cybertronic Spree? They're that Toronto-based band that likes to dress up in Transformers cosplay and go around playing awesome songs from the 86 movie and other songs that are really cool. Well, they're going on a North American tour for 2020, and that's freaking awesome. So they got a little blurb on their Twitter page here. They're saying tickets are going on sale February 7th at 10 a.m. at thecybertronicspree.com. If you have never gone to thecybertronicspree.com, you are missing out. This is a website that is dead out of the 80s, like, or 90s, I guess. those 80s like websites. But it is a really throwback website, and it's really fun to look at, so the dates that they've got, they don't have a lot shown here right now, except for one in Toronto. So
don't look at their website, look at the Twitter link.
Yeah, Twitter image has the whole list of tour dates. It doesn't have location, like, you know, it doesn't have the venues,
shit.
But it does have the cities.
Oh
yeah.
Wow, I didn't actually open up the image. There you go. Okay.
Pittsburgh is there.
An awesome image too.
There you are. So
May 19th in Pittsburgh.
So yeah, March 21st, Toronto. March 31st, Denver, Colorado. April 1st, Salt Lake City, Utah. April 3rd, Vancouver, British Columbia. April 4th, Victoria, British Columbia. You know
what? You're going to read them all?
Well, people are all over the place here. I mean, you want to know where the you want to know where to see these guys? These guys are awesome.
They can click the link.
Yeah,
this is audio.
Did you say that
audio? People listening more, in their cars. I don't want them clicking.
Did you say more dates are coming? I'm kind of hoping that they cut it off at June 7th in Montreal, and it's right around TFCon time. So
it's a whole month difference. Like, this is a heavy schedule, but, man.
I mean, maybe they're starting a Canadian, you know, part of the tour.
I mean, Canadian dates are peppered all throughout this. So
it is a North American tour.
Yeah.
So
there's no Moscow date as far as I know, but no.
I see what you're trying to do. But Charles will disown me. Yeah, so the important dates are up there. I mean,
they also take a month off between the end of middle of April and beginning of May. They go from April 14th to May 14th without a show. So they take a break after Phoenix and then head up to Michigan, because that is a lot of distance to travel to do a show.
Sure. And I mean, you've got what is it? Victoria Day's in there somewhere too. So you got to have Victoria Day. And you guys don't have Victoria Day, so. Yeah, there's a lot of really cool dates in there. Trying to think they're in Orlando, Florida on May 27th. You could see them.
They
there.
Are. And New York on June 5th. So I have two options.
You have two chances to see them.
If I'm not fully moved down here by then.
Yeah. Tons of dates here. I mean, let's from March 21st to June 7th, there's, what is it? 2, 4, 6, 8. There's 30 dates. Like, that's, I don't know. I don't really follow a lot of like bands tour schedules, but that seems like a heavy schedule for 3 months. So I'm proud of them. This is a small band that likes to cosplay as Transformers, man. So I'm proud of them.
Yeah, I played some of their stuff for my kid tonight, and he was just kind of entranced at seeing these people dressed up as Transformers playing music.
Yeah, man, it's so fun. They're great. And we met them at TFCon Toronto last year. So they're fun people.
Do you think they drive their tour van in costume? Like, just turn and look on the side of the road and there's, you know, a Quintesson driving a van.
They are their tour van.
Yeah. They'll just pile into Rodimus. Yeah, that's great. And lastly, we've got one last bit of media news here for this week. This came out earlier on in the week, but it kind of got kind of buried by the news of that came out at the end of the week. But we're still going to have a bit of a discussion here. Two new Transformers movies are going to be produced simultaneously. So apparently they're going to be working on Bumblebee 2 and a Beast Wars movie at the same time. This is a news story out of Variety. They're reporting that two new live-action movies will be written by James Vanderbilt and Joby Harold. And don't know which one is doing which, but...
The Deadline article says that.
It what?
The Deadline article says that.
Oh, it does? Oh, okay.
The Vanderbilt project is likely the Beast Wars, and the other one is Bumblebee.
Oh, okay. And so it says Paramount is currently seeking out directors and a fresh new cast for the movies. The studio is looking to revamp the movie franchise. So we've got James Vanderbilt. He was the script writer for Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2, as well as Zodiac. So that's the James Garfield one. No, James Garfield? No, not yeah. James Garfield.
Andrew
Garfield.
Yeah.
James Garfield was one of your presidents, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
For about a month, yeah.
He died in 30 days.
Hey, there you go.
Or was that, that William Henry Harrison? I don't remember. It's from that Simpsons episode.
And Joby Harold is best known for his work on King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. That was a colossal failure, I think. But he's currently working on the script for DC's new DC Universe's The Flash. So is this a movie? Are they doing a Flash movie?
Yes.
Oh.
It's been in development hell for a while, but
hopefully
with recent, like, you know, hits like Aquaman and stuff, I'm hoping they're getting on track. And Ezra Miller just showed up on TV somehow.
You know, speaking of development hell, I think, you know, something worth noting here is that the TFW article kind of misrepresents what the Variety story is. So these aren't being produced. So there's no production going on, right? So there's nobody, you know, putting down lights and cameras and actually putting something to film. These are in development. So these are just in the script phase, in the writing phase, in the kind of world building phase. Mm-hmm. So these could change drastically over time.
Oh, yeah, I know. We remember back when I can't remember. It must have been Paramount or whatnot brought in, 45 writers?
The Akiva Goldsman
writers. Yeah.
Yeah. With Kirkman and the writer of Iron Man 2 or something like that as well. And just said, look, we're going to write out a bunch of movies here and they're going to be, you know, yeah, it was a mess. So. Yeah, that's the stage that we're in now. At least it's not 45 writers; it's two, and they're
no, and we're, you know what, we're there's some interesting credits to both of these guys. So, Joby Harold was the writer and director of a film called Awake in 2007 that starred Hayden Christensen. So good chance we could see him in a Transformers property.
All right.
And James Vanderbilt, he was an executive producer on Altered Carbon, which I believe is Netflix, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So I've heard good things about that. His other credits other than Spider-Man movies is Independence Day Resurgence. But I haven't seen much else well-known from him.
I'm tugging my collar here. Ooh. You're not selling me.
I love Independence Day, and I'm just I can't bring myself to watch that.
All right, well, let's kind of move past the names attached to these right now and look at the option of what we're faced with. We've got a Bumblebee 2 possible movie and a Beast Wars possible movie. Is this what we're after here? Because I remember back when Bumblebee was being produced that the possible sequel was going to be an Optimus Prime focused movie, and that seems to have just gotten completely scrapped. And is Beast Wars what we want? I mean, we just reviewed a show, and that was, you know, that seems to be pretty fairly highly regarded. Where do we want to go? I mean, they seem to be aiming at live action. They're sticking with live action, and the CGI that was so nostalgic and highly loved and from the Bumblebee movie is not something that they're kind of focusing on. Where is everyone looking here, Charles?
I mean, I don't know what quote unquote live action means for Beast Wars. The original story of Beast Wars is they're set on prehistoric Earth and there's no humans around. So I would prefer them to stick with that story or stick with the Maximals and Predacons. You know, I would prefer an animated movie, like a complete CGI animated movie. Some people have said they'd like it in the style of the new Lion King. I'm not really sold on that. I'd prefer a more like animated look, like, you know, like something like Pixar. But that's just me. And Pixar is expensive, so you know, I don't know how well that would that could get done. But
well, if you think about it, any Transformers movie is essentially animated.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be expensive.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but I mean, so for me, I mean, I don't want a Beast Wars where they're their animals dropped into 21st century Earth, and you know, there's some storyline where they're like at the they break out of the zoo or and something, and then they run around with their human friends and their pets or something like that. That is completely not what I want to see. So if it goes in that
could
direction,
they have three could they have three penguins that are cheeky and funny?
Yeah,
I mean, this just became the Madagascar.
Yeah,
movie,
exactly, but. Exactly. You know, I don't, but you know, and Madagascar was animated. they at least focused on the animals. I mean, if the problem I see with always doing live action is that the tendency is, if you're doing a live action movie, you focus on the human actors because that's, you know, that's the primary focus of filming, and then everything else is expensive special effect, and so. You know, the Transformers become an afterthought just because of the nature of the filming process. And I don't want that. I want them to be the focus of the movie, whether it's Bumblebee, where, I mean, I hope if you're doing a Bumblebee sequel, Bumblebee now has his memories back. He's not, you know, E.T. or whatever. He's just going to be a Transformer. Maybe he hooks up with other Autobots and finds a... and fights against a group of Decepticons and make that the focus of the movie, not following around a human or befriending another human. I mean, it's humans can be there. I mean, I'm not anti-human, but don't make them the focus of your Transformers movie. Make the Transformers the focus of your Transformers movie. That's my central complaint for all the live action Transformers movies. So, that's what I hope happens with either of these projects, and maybe with, and crossing my fingers, if Michael Bay is not involved, maybe we'll get that.
All right. Jeremy, what are you're pretty heavy on the Beast Wars stuff. I mean, we know I love it, but you know, you love it. Yeah. So
I wouldn't say I love it as much as you, but I really enjoy it.
Right. I mean, is a Beast Wars movie, are we ready for a Beast Wars movie? Could we handle it?
I think the Transformers fandom could handle a Beast Wars movie. I think the regular movie going public is not ready for the leaps of faith. Or, you know, the leaps of kind of, you know, suspending your disbelief and stuff needed to make the leaps from vehicles to animals.
Right.
Maybe if Beast Wars was like a few movies down where you're showing, like, you know, starting off, like, you know, with a ship of robots that crash land on a planet. But I think what people want is what we saw in the first 5 minutes of Bumblebee. Give us a space-based adventure with Transformers, something like Last Stand of the Wreckers, or just any number of stories that is kind of just space-based. You can make it, you know, it's CGI clearly, but it's not Pixar-y. It's more, you know, gritty. And I guarantee that will be a blockbuster. You know, it's just, it screams summer blockbuster. Mm-hmm. And I'm not worried about Bumblebee 2. I think as long as they get, you know, same actress.
Haley Steinfeld.
And, yeah, Haley Steinfeld. You know, I think they're going to be fine.
The article already said new casts for both movies. Oh,
right.
Well, then, I don't know, screw
and
it.
They wanna and they want to revamp the movie franchise, right? So is it, by revamp, I take that as starting over. And
I understand. But
starting over with a Bumblebee 2?
Yeah, that's the thing. If you're saying it's Bumblebee 2, the best things about Bumblebee was the cohesive story and the relationship between Haley Steinfeld's character and Bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
And without, you know, without that relationship, you're going to have to kind of redo the introduction and everything. And it's just, you've already done that. Build on it. And you're falling into the same traps that they did with the Bay movies. So anyway, I just give me some continuity or just give me a space-based movie and, you know, just give me some, you know, crazy action. Don't give me what we got with five Bay movies.
And Ant, interested to hear your take on this as we've never really talked about the movies before. But, Yeah, it's where do you think they would take a Beast Wars movie?
So, you know, it's one of those things. When I heard this news the beginning of the week, I was really kind of trying to figure out what you could do, and and even as you guys were talking, I was just thinking about this. Like, so my concern is that Beast Wars, the cartoon itself, is it's pretty much a solid and complete and whole story. There's really not a lot to improve on, and there's nothing that I feel like needs to be retold, right? It exists already. It's something that's out there. You know, as we talked about before, the animation could be brought up to date, but the stories themselves and the writing, it's all kind of there. So either they have to find a way to retell that story and put some twists on it and make it a little different, like you would do with like a comic book property being adapted to TVs, like something like The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones, where they would swap characters out for different instances and make things change, but they don't really have that amount of time in a movie, right? So as you guys were talking, I was thinking about it, right? Transformers works best in what way, right? When, one, if there are no humans, right? That's usually the way a lot of us think, because it forces us as viewers to sympathize with the robots and the aliens, right? And humanize them. So if you did a Beast Wars story, a Maximal Predacon story set on Cybertron, and then did the space-based story on them, right? Because that's basically what the Beast Wars story is at its outset, and then took it in a different direction, you might have something there for a two-hour film. And I think that might be the way to go, because then they could be beasts wherever and not have the human interaction and allow us to enjoy the robots as characters. The problem is that with Hollywood, they want humans because they need a face to put to the movie to sell the movie around the world. So that's kind of the tricky part, right? So otherwise, then you just have an animated film. Mm-hmm. The other way humans work best with Transformers, right, is when we see the Transformers through their eyes, right? So there, when you use the human, like in Bumblebee, as a way to relate to the robot, right? So you know, Charlie's story in that movie with Bumblebee is both of them kind of feeling out of place and finding each other. So there's that in that tale, and you relate to Bumblebee via Charlie because Bumblebee doesn't talk, right? So if you were to do a Beast Wars film, you know, set on Earth, you almost have to, you know, like thinking about like the most powerful moments in the cartoon, right? Code of Hero is usually the one everyone goes to, and if you think about it, that's a story that where it ends with Dinobot protecting the humans. That's his whole goal. He dies for that purpose. And so his death is amplified by the fact that we're humans and we identify with those humans that didn't get killed. So with that, all that in mind, like you would have to do a Beast Wars story where it's something along those lines, where they travel back in time and then they have to protect prehistoric man from these technological monsters in the Predacons. I think that's really the gist of a tale that you could tell in about 2 hours. That would be my take on the Beast Wars stuff. And then for the Bumblebee thing, you know, the Deadline article doesn't say it's a sequel to Bumblebee. It says it's based in the Bumblebee universe. So that could be anything. That could be that Optimus Prime solo movie that we've heard rumors about, you know, yeah, last year.
That's true. Yeah. Well, that's a lot of good stuff to kind of think about there. I personally don't know what I'd think about a Beast Wars movie. I can see a lot of interesting stuff being done there. CGI has come a long way from where it was in, what was it, 96? So, I mean, we've got a movie in the theaters right now called Call of the Wild, where Harrison Ford is acting with a CGI dog for the most part. And
I thought that was Star Wars.
That's a big dog. Star Wars.
Oh.
Yeah, and I actually had to tell my wife that the dog was CGI, and she's like, no, it's not. I said, yeah, look, they can't make they can't make a dog roll its eyes. So, yeah, they can make everything CGI look incredibly realistic now. So, I'd be interested to see what they could do with a Beast Wars movie, but as far as a story, personally, I don't care where it's based. They are going to have it with people, like you said, because that's who's going to sell the movie, right? Nobody's going to be excited to see the the new Optimus Primal movie, right? They don't know. Nobody remembers that. Nobody outside of Transformers remembers who that is. So
see, I would put one exception to that is that we have to think about the timing of a film like this. So we are 25 years removed from Beast Wars, right?
Yeah.
So that puts, if you were 5 or 6 at the time Beast Wars came out and you were a kid playing with those toys, that puts you at about 30, 31 years old.
Sure.
So you're an adult with disposable income that probably remembers some of this stuff, has nostalgia like we did at that age, and have young kids, or, you know, we're planning to have young kids, whatever the case may be, that there's certainly a market there, I think, that they're trying to tap into.
Of course. Yeah, no, and I totally get it. It's just one of those things, like, you know, that it's I don't know. It's one of those aspects of your nostalgia where Beast Wars lost an awful lot of fans when it changed from, you know, cars to animals, or you know, vehicles to animals. I was one of them, right? I did not care for the animals. You know, I love the toys now. They're fantastic, but I still can't watch the show. But going back and looking at, you know, doing it now, it would be, you know, it would be an interesting, you know, way to kind of, you know, see the resurgence of it. And I get you, 25 years is a great time to kind of bring this back. But yeah, I don't know if it would be the biggest hit.
I don't know if I agree with you there, where, you know, it lost you, but it brought me back. So we net we cancel each other out.
Sure.
So
sure. Yeah,
I feel like, you know, Beast Wars, for what it was, it reinvigorated the franchise. It was the right time, right? So this property came out just as the internet was becoming a thing. You know, people were getting, you know, the AOL discs in the mail. And becoming a, you know, part of an online community. They,
sure,
you know, the Transformers fan community was built around Beast Wars. And
yeah,
you know, you break it down, that was like when the writers first started putting Easter eggs in, mentioning people's names, doing, you know, little things for us, and interacting with us and creating what would then eventually be, you know, this fan movement, which would eventually lead to the Michael Bay films as it was. So if you follow that path, like, To say that Beast Wars doesn't have some sort of resonance, I just don't see that. I see that as it may have pushed you away for a time, but even eventually it brought you back in.
Well, Beast Wars itself didn't bring me back in, but Transformers, in one way or another, obviously got me back in. But what do you call it? Because, I mean, it wasn't called Beast Wars here in Canada, right? It was called Beasties. So, you know, what. You got a whole country worth of people that will, you know, most of the fans will know that it was in fact called Beast Wars proper, but you know, Beasties as the cartoon with the title head and everything was the way it was marketed here, right? So I mean, it did get marketed differently.
I mean, I think that can be overcome. I mean, in the UK, the Turtles were marketed as Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, and I don't think these days anyone would not be able to figure out that ninjas can be heroes.
Right.
And Transformers having a war is not a foreign concept.
And in a film, it's easier to get away with that title than in a kid's television show.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I know. I get it. I'm just kind of reminding people of the way things, you know, were back in 96. So I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how it works out. I don't necessarily think it needs to be prehistoric, right? It doesn't matter to me when and where it happens. It's just you know, but I think it would look okay. It's just I don't think the story is going to be necessarily let's say fan approved, right? So it'll be more of a, you know, this will work for the mass audience, right? But yeah, we'll see. I mean, this is just the earliest of early days, and we'll see where this goes. But that's it for media news.
All right, let's move on to convention news.
All right, we've only got a couple small things here for convention news, so we'll be moving on pretty quickly.
Yeah.
First thing we have here is TFCon Orlando has announced that Hal Rail will be a voice actor guest. He was the voice of Shrapnel, Snarl, Pipes, and Skexoid in G1, in addition to a number of other things. He says he will be attending all weekend, signing for fans, so that'll be awesome.
He was the voice of Predator in the second Predator film.
Oh, okay. That's where I was confused, because I thought Peter Cullen was the voice of the Predator, but that was probably Predator 1.
That's correct.
Okay. I have not seen either. But you know, this will be exciting for people like Ant that are going to get to go to TFCon. I'm sure you're going to try to get some content for TF University.
Try.
You're going to try. Yeah. It is tough. We'll talk to us later about horror story. But, you know, that'll be exciting. This is March 20th through 22nd, so we are just at about a month and a half away. TF Nation has announced that James Reyes is going to be attending. He was a big part of the Dreamwave era. He did Transformers, Armada, and Energon. He's done a few things for IDW. He's done some covers around the Dark Cybertron era. He did some stuff. And if you've never seen his massive Star Wars print that he did a few years ago, it's amazing. He got like every character from every era in this one massive print. So he's a great guy. And this will be August 14th through 16th. And updated information about tickets is going to be on February 15th. So be sure to check out tfnation.com for all updates on that. So I think that is it for convention news. I don't think anything else has happened.
Check the doc, Jeremy.
Oh, yeah. We were going to follow up on that BotCon stuff that we talked about in the toy show. Yeah. So BotCon's coming back. All right. Let's move on to feedback. Okay. So, yeah, seriously. BotCon is coming back. They have announced a 2021 date. Nothing more specific than that. BotCon.com. After we were kind of doing all the speculation on the toy show, it has now updated with more information. You got some past logos on here and a letter from Carl Hartman. Actually, the letter is on actually the AllSpark article on this. But there's like a little history here, BotCon, some pictures, and a store. But on the AllSpark article, they kind of got the exclusive. And Carl Hartman kind of just, it's a nice article or a nice letter kind of to the fans, kind of giving the story of BotCon, how, you know, he thought it was over. But as Simon Furman says, it never ends. So he and another number of other people have formed this BC Productions, and they are announcing BotCon 2021. So let's speculate. Ant, you've definitely gone to the most BotCons out of all of us.
14, I think, was my last count.
Yeah. So knowing now that it is going to be something that's happening, what are your thoughts on it?
Oh boy, that is a loaded question.
I know there is controversy, and we'll probably want to get into that, but just kind of that aside.
I think
see Carl Hartman back, and
yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, if it controversy aside, if that piece that we'll get into wasn't there, I was thinking about this this morning before that part of it kind of stuck out as an unofficial convention. I think we covered it pretty well last night. BotCon, this is basically just kind of, you know, recycling the name and trying to make it part of something that we remember. It's kind of the nostalgia play that we were just talking about, right? So it's, you know, my first BotCon was in 99, and so that's, you know, in that 20 to 25 year realm. Yeah, I mean, other than that, it's not official. There's nothing that I've seen that says this is you know, Hasbro endorsed or is going to have any sort of Hasbro presence, right? I get my Hasbro fix from various other conventions, This, and I get my fan convention fix from other conventions. So unless it's,
and you get your exclusive fix from like Hasbro Pulse,
and whatever, you know, Amazon or Walmart, whoever else is doing something. Right. So, you know, this is an, I don't really necessarily see the need for it. So unless it's nearby, prior to knowing the other stuff that we'll talk about, if it's close by, maybe I'll go. And that was my thinking, at least before that, before everything else came out about this.
Cool. Daryl.
Yeah.
With TFCon now doing, it seems, about 3 shows a year, 2 in the U.S., 1 in Canada, is there room for BotCon?
No, that's a good question. I think that there would be. It would have to be a show that kind of it didn't compete with the TFCons and the shit. I just forgot the name.
Dairy Con.
Yeah, your cow show there.
well, there's TF Expo.
Yeah. Sidefest Northwest.
Yeah. I mean, these shows have blossomed into their own markets, and they work well. So BotCon deciding to come back and say, hey, you know, we're back. Where are all our peeps at, kind of thing, is slapping all these other shows in the face and saying, no, you know, we're back now, and we'll take all of our patrons. Thanks. I think Ant touched on it there a bit. The big draw, and I'm saying this as someone who's never been to a BotCon, but the big draw that I've been able to suss out for BotCons has been exclusives. And I think I said this in the other show that we did on for the toy show there, is that with the big draw being exclusives, if BotCon is in fact an unofficial show now with no Hasbro affiliation, which then means no official exclusives, this show is just another show now. It's nothing special. It's just a name. It's a name that brings back a nostalgia kick, like we were saying, and that's about it. Because the big draw was the toys that you would buy and flip for 2-3 times their value almost immediately. And that is a huge draw for people.
Yeah. I mean, I would do that. I would get the Primus package for me and my wife. And before the first day, hers was on eBay, and it was essentially pay for everything else I bought on the show.
Of course. You can't tell me that that's not a huge draw.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. So why would people not want to be able to do that some more? Why would, you present somebody with the idea that they can go to a convention, buy some stuff and sell it immediately and pay for their entire weekend? That's crazy. Of course they want to do that. This thing, if it's unofficial, like everyone seems to think that it is, means absolutely nothing to anybody now.
Put it this way: if it wasn't called BotCon, would you care?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, in the years since BotCon has ended, so many other smaller shows have sprung up. I mean, TFCon I think is almost as old as the original BotCon. I mean, now it's older because it kept going. DairyCon is celebrating its 20th year, but we've had like TF Expo is big in Kansas and that area, and I don't know. I think they need to clearly define who they are, what they're going to be about, and schedule it away from some of these other shows.
Yeah.
Charles, what are your thoughts on all this?
So, I mean, I think I also, like we had the discussion in the last show, I think there's room for another Transformers convention, if it needs to be spread out separate from the other ones in the year. But I think there's always like people are spread out. Fans are all over the country. I mean, if we're talking about just North America, fans are all over Canada, US, Mexico. If this show has a location that's somewhat separate from where TFCon has been, where the other local cons like DairyCon, TF Expo, CybFest, Northwest. If it's in a region where people normally don't get access to a TFCon, or, you know, I mean, I would say it's like something like the Northeast. I mean, we just had TFCon DC, but like the Northeast or New England Pittsburgh.
By the organizers, it's probably going to be in the middle of the country. Indiana or Kentucky or somewhere general vicinity.
Chicago. Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's always nice for people who don't normally get out to a convention to have an option. So I think having another option for a Transformers convention that you can go to is a good thing. I don't think this is going to take away from the other conventions. I think there's enough space there and there are enough fans to support multiple conventions in a year. I mean, it's not as special without Hasbro exclusives, without, those toy exclusives. It's kind of, quote unquote, just another fan-run convention. But I think there's room for other fan-run Transformers conventions, depending on how big the Transformers fandom is. So, depending on where it is, I mean, I would consider going if it was, if it was a couple hours drive from me. I don't think it's going to be have a major impact on other shows as coming back other than people who are nostalgic for the BotCon name and tradition. I mean, having Carl Hartman be one of the people running it, I think that maybe generates some goodwill, although maybe that goodwill is canceled out by some other bad will, I think that's going to be an issue that they're going to have to resolve in the next, I guess, year and a half lead up soon.
Hell of a first day to have.
Yeah. I know. So let's get into that. So in addition to Carl Hartman, I mean, you have some others. Let me get this list.
Andrew Hall is involved.
Andrew Hall, yep. Which I've recognized that name.
So Andrew Hall is probably best known by his screen name Hydra. He's been around the fandom for a while. He's actually based in Japan. He is an American based in Japan, and he helps with the translation of the IDW books to Japanese market, among some other things that's where I've seen his name involved in things. He's actually someone I know from BotCon back in the day. Interesting thing note here is that both he and Carl are incredibly tall. Like, I'm 6'2" and I look up at both of them. So it'd be just interesting to figure out who else is involved and how tall they are in relation to those two.
Yeah. And then Brett Lovell, the name rings a bell, but I can't remember. I can't like place him.
That one's alien to me.
Yeah. And then the letter just says the rest of the BC Productions crew, but it's come out because on the site, when you click on the store, it goes to, Pete's Robocon, and that is, or it goes to Night Shining LLC, which is the company that runs Pete's Robocon and is run by Pete Sinclair, who was part of Fun Pub, and that's where a lot of this controversy is coming from, because he doesn't have a history of maybe the most, public relations savvy social media posts.
And he was the guy that was hired as the PR guy, by the way.
Yes, but I mean, if you remember when the BotCon account was tweeting some inappropriate things.
Yeah, I wouldn't know anything about that. And I'm the one who mentioned it.
I mean, there is a large portion of the fandom that is upset that he is involved. And I have been kind of lurking in the AllSpark Discord, kind of watching a lot of this, like watching a train wreck. I have so much sympathy for Kalidor, the main admin there at AllSpark, because I honestly believe he did not see this coming. He thought this was going to be a great thing. And from what I've seen him post, he has said things like he thought like most of people's issues with Fun Pub were with other people. So I feel like he was probably blindsided by a lot of this. He was probably expecting to have a much better day than he had. Where they go from here, I don't know. I mean, the PR, they need to get out in front of this and deal with it. I don't know. You guys have any comments? I mean, I don't know. I will say that, like, the few times I've met Pete Sinclair in person, he was personable, but you can't ignore all the online stuff that is clearly out there. So
yeah, I mean, I've only met him personally a couple of times. I think I was with you, like, it was at TFCon Chicago 2014, or briefly met him, but yeah, I haven't had a lot of interaction with him. I mean, the thing I go on is, like, there are a lot of fans that I kind of trust in the community that have all kind of given a thumbs down to Pete Sinclair. So just by going by that, that gives me pause. Like, you know, but for me personally, I mean, if it's planned for 2021, it's a year, it's over a year away. I'm willing to just wait and see how things develop. But for right now, I'm just sitting back. I'm not really diving in deep until they come out with more details.
Yeah, I mean, it is still so early. There is clearly, in the fast moving PR cycle we're in, there is time to figure out, readjust, and work through this. Ant, you have any thoughts or comments?
Yeah, you know, look, my online history with Pete Sinclair in terms of the back and forth is pretty much out there for people to see. So I don't think I need to really address much of that. But I will start with a question, and it, trust me, it leads to something. Do any of you guys remember Woodstock? Right?
Not personally.
Exactly. We weren't there, right? But we heard all these great things about Woodstock in the 60s, right? And there's all these great nostalgic stories of this halcyon time that was had at Woodstock, the performance by Jimi Hendrix and whatever, like Don't Eat the Brown Acid, you know, they had Free Love, and on all the crazy things that happened at Woodstock. But it's this great memory that has been kind of forged into the consciousness. And that's kind of how I feel. I project, particularly, and people who were there at the early days of BotCon talk about what BotCon was in the pre-FunPub era. So everything up through the final, you know, OTFCCs, and then when it switched over to FunPub, it was a lot like Woodstock '99, right? It started out okay, and by the end of it, the whole place was on fire, right? So that is essentially FunPub's involvement with BotCon, is that for all the things they did, whatever good was there was always going to be overshadowed by the fact that they set the place on fire. This is starting to feel like Woodstock 50. What was Woodstock 50? That happened last year. It got canceled before it even happened. And, you know, they were playing on the fact that there was an anniversary and people knew the name. Mm-hmm. And that's starting to, going back to what we talked about before, this is just that. It's a play on the name. And this is, you know, this is right out of the Pete Sinclair playbook. I mean, Pete's RoboCon was basically, you know, that convention, the draw for that convention every time was, look what we didn't do at BotCon, and look what we could have done at BotCon, and look, I used to work at BotCon. Eventually, well, you're running out of runway for something like that.
Well, see, but now he has a registration pack with a BotCon 2021 pre-party exclusive.
Right, you're proving my point.
So now he's gone from the past to the future. So yeah, I can just hope that it doesn't become like the Firefest, which, you know, yeah, Woodstock 50 didn't happen. So at least, you know, people didn't get swindled. Firefest was just, you know,
skepticism intensifies.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of us have really good memories about BotCon. Those of us that went, but
would you have those memories? Like, even like you said, other than it being an official convention, you're going to have those memories now more so than ever at other conventions, because not even just the exclusives. Forget that for now, right? The other draw of BotCon was the voice actors, the people involved, the creatives involved with the brand. those people all tour now. They all do things now. There's a convention circuit, you know, of just conventions of that do that. Yes, they're not Transformers focused, but there's even Transformers focused conventions at this point. The need isn't there.
And yeah, that's where I was going to go, because, like, you know, at this point in my life and where I am kind of in the fandom and everything, I'm going, like, you know, I'm trying my darndest to go to TFCon Toronto this year, and it's more just to see the people that I know, meet new people, you know, meet people, listen to the podcast, and, you know, just, it's not really even about the toys or even the guests so much as the other fans that, you know, I want to catch up with and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes for a much cheaper convention experience. And you know, you can have it at any convention, really. I mean, I'm hoping to go to DairyCon just for a day, just to kind of, you know, see a few people I know locally, and, you know, just enjoy the wacky fun that is DairyCon. I mean, at this point, they're gonna have to do a lot to kind of separate themselves out from the bigger conventions, and, you know, what makes BotCon different from TFCon.
Right now, that's Pete Sinclair.
Right.
Don't.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I think we've all had issues with, you know, every con that we've gone to, but, you know, this is a big hurdle that they're going to have to, just from the gate, they're going to have to overcome. So, anyone have any closing thoughts on BotCon? No? All right, well, I guess we will be following this, you know, in depth, and we will see what happens, if it happens.
Yep. Good luck.
All right. So that is it for our short convention news segment.
All right. Let's finish up the show with a little bit of feedback.
All right. We have a voicemail from John Levengood, the one of our awesome Donatrions. And let's listen to what he has to say.
Hey guys, John 4X11Good here again. I'm sure by now you guys have already gotten the news that Paramount's shopping the idea around about two new Transformers live-action films, one based on the continuation of the Bumblebee movie, and the other based on Beast Wars. And, you know, my thoughts are, I'm kind of interested in this, and I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this. But, I mean, other than obviously good acting, good writing, you know, good graphics, things like that, what in a Beast Wars movie would you guys be interested in? Me personally, I would love to see the photorealistic animals akin to the Lion King in one, you know, and obviously, you know, the standard characters, Optimus Primal, Rat Trap, Rhinox, the like. So what are your guys' thoughts on this? Catch you on the next time. Bye.
See previous segment. Well,
yeah, we answered a lot of it. One thing I didn't mention in the previous segment that I would love to see is, if they follow kind of the basic formula, I would like to see the actual theft of the golden disc and, you know, kind of a little bit more before they get the beast modes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of get into the characters first, and then they get the transformation into this new form. I think that would be fun. Set it up more as a heist type thing at the beginning.
Yeah, I think, you know, listening to John's question, the one thing I thought of while that was going on was that what they can do, they would be a little less restrained by location for a film like this, so that they could kind of, you know, with the show and its budget, they couldn't really get out of, you know, where they were, which is basically the jungle and the desert, right? But in this, they can really explore some of the other characters and, or other just, you know, physical features of the landscape, so we can do, like, Polar Claw and Tigatron like in the snow or something, or, you know, like, they could certainly go, you know, further with some of the water stuff that we saw only towards you know, in season three and the end of season two. I think that they have options in terms of location and what type of animal they would use for those locations, where they can kind of expand from the core cast a bit.
Cool. Anyone else have any more comments on that?
I think I pretty much said all I needed to say on it in the last bit.
Yeah, I think just I think I already mentioned it in the earlier segment, but I was not really a fan of the photorealistic animals in Lion King. Like, I mean, maybe that was just reaction to
like the contrast between the animated Lion King movie, which I really like, and
it's the mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. It's just the mouth.
No facial expressions on photorealistic right. animals.
Didn't they learn from Summer of Sam?
Apparently not.
I would prefer a more stylized animated look, like a you know, CG animation that's more. It could be more in the style of the first 5 minutes of the Bumblebee movie, but with me, you know, maybe, I mean, I would even, you know, you could have robotic animals instead of the, you know, the flesh and blood animals. I mean, that's another
option. Straight to Transmetals.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? If you want, and you could set it on Cybertron even. I mean, we've got the video game Horizon Zero Dawn that has robotic animals featured in it. So, you know, that might be something you could approach you could take without weirding people out too much. Maybe, I don't know. I think that's the only thing I'd add. The others, I think we discussed it a little in depth in the media segment.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is all our feedback this week.
All right. So we did have some additional feedback. Well, we'll push it to next week just because we're running a bit long. But thanks. Everyone for listening, and thanks to Ant for hanging out with us this week. He did a great job helping us out.
Thank you,
Harry.
Like I said, happy to be here. It's always fun joining in. And just so I could try this real quick, hold on, I'm just gonna do it. Ready? Bow, 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 bow. That work?
I think we found our new Yoshi.
Yeah. Let's see how it compares.
Bow, bow, bow. Bow.
You're a little.
I listen at double speed, so that's probably why it was much faster.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Well, Ant, tell everyone where they can find your stuff.
Okay, so if you're listening to this podcast, you can definitely find my podcast, Transformers University. It's everywhere you find podcasts, and it's also on YouTube at youtube.com/TFUinfo, and you can find me on Twitter, usually. I'm at TFU_info, and the website is www.tfu.info.
Awesome. And we will have links in the show notes as well. So everyone, if you're curious and have trouble finding them, although Google's a thing, so I'm sure no one will have trouble finding them, but we will have helpful links for you in the show notes as well. All right. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week.